For that, we are in Psalm chapter 101. We've been in this series for quite a while now. Different psalms we're looking at, different subjects, and we will go through the end of the year, and then we will be move on to something different. I will say I'm really excited. I mentioned periodically, but I want us to start thinking and preparing for next year. As I've mentioned, you know, it's a night. I don't want next year's theme to be a nice banner that's up there. It'll be a nice banner. I've seen the design already, and I don't want it just to be something like, you know, okay, hey, that's just something we're throwing out there. I want it to be something we live, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, okay? You're going to have to come on January 5th, and we'll tell you everything about it, but I think it's something that can help us personally in every single way, and if it helps us personally, it'll also help the church. Church is just a group of individuals, and so really the strength of the church is dependent upon the strength of the members of the church. And if we're right, the church will be right, and I hope that you are thinking that way. And you ought to think, as you go to the new year, you ought to be thinking, what do I want to accomplish? What do I want to what do I want to be next year? What do I want to grow in? I told my wife jokingly yesterday. I said one of my goals for next year is for you to be a better wife. So it's supposed to be me to be a better husband. Thanks for catching that one. And she didn't buy that either. But you ought to be thinking, what am I going to do next year? What is there areas of my life that was that were weak? There are areas of my life, spiritually speaking, primarily that it wasn't clicking for me. And so you make plans for that. And I hope that you're already doing that, because I really want to. Next year is a pivotal year. We're going to be in the new building. And we'll be in the auditorium, and we'll have a couple of those rooms downstairs at the same time while we're finishing up the rest of the bottom floor, and then once we get in there, the rest of the top floor. And those aren't really as intensive when it comes to the work that has to be done as to what we're doing now. Really, those are just basically, you know, finishing up and so forth. And so we have to be prepared for that as individuals and as a church, and so I'm really excited about it, and I hope that you'll get excited about it too. Well, we're looking at the book of Psalms, and we're going to be in 101 tonight. How can you find out what is important to them? You can ask them. In the course of talking to them, they can tell you what's important to them. How can you tell what people really believe? What's really in their heart? What's really a belief system? Because really our belief system determines what we do in our lives. Again, you can ask them or they can tell you. What kind of Christian is somebody? Everybody and their brother will tell you that they love Jesus, but I don't think that's necessarily true in a lot of instances. But you can't get past the fact that really the only way to know what's important to somebody, what they believe, really what type of Christian they are, is really just watch their life. That's it. We'll explain a few things about that. By the way, that's scriptural. Turn over to Matthew chapter 7. I want you to look at these verses. Keep your finger in Psalm 101, because we're going to refer back to Psalm 101, and we're going to look at Psalm 101 in depth. But I want us to see this, that it is important. You can tell what someone's like. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 14. We'll read a few verses here. We're going to look at Matthew 7, verse 14 to 20. It says, "Because straight is a gate, narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that findeth. Beware of false prophets which come unto you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves." So there's a gate, and not a lot of people get into that, the gate of truth, the gate of salvation. And there are a lot of false prophets. Verse 16, "Ye shall know them by their what? Fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit." Okay? You tell how the tree is, the health of the tree, what it's like. What kind of fruit is it producing? "Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, and a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit." Verse 17, 18, "A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit. Neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth forth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast in the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. That you can tell if you observe someone's life long enough what they're really like. It says if they're a good tree, they're going to bring forth good fruit, and they can't bring forth bad fruit. Now, it doesn't mean that someone who's a good Christian, they're doing the right thing, doesn't necessarily trip up every now and then. Okay, but I'm talking about, you know, the natural part. The when you look at their life as a whole, the direction and how you would describe them is they have good fruit. And someone who is not a good Christian or is struggling in their life, they are going to bring forth bad fruit, and they can't bring forth good fruit. Now, not that they might not occasionally do some things or be able to fool you for a while, but you're going to be able to tell what kind of person they are by the fruit in their life. It's very well seen. Now, people who are Christians try to excuse this. They point to Samuel and David's brother Eliab. Let me read a couple of verses about that. That's when Samuel was told by God, go see Jesse. One of his sons is going to be the king. David wasn't even thought very highly. He wasn't even invited to the party, okay? David, you stay to work. The rest of the guys are here. And Samuel goes there, and here comes Eliab. And Eliab looked the part. And Samuel's thinking in his heart, this job's over. There's God's anointed right here, right now, the number one son. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 6, God differed. And it came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. And let me translate that. Bingo! We got him. Verse 7. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as a man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. The problem was that Eliab was not king material. He wasn't somebody that was going that God wanted to lead. He wasn't a guy that was close enough to God. And God and saw just in a cursory looking, Samuel couldn't tell that. Samuel looked at him and like, okay, he looks the part. He's big. He looks, you know, some people just look the part. This is the guy. God's like, you can only see the outside, but I really see the heart. Now, you say, well, that misproves your point. No, because later on we saw Eliab outwardly. He couldn't hide it forever. When David was there, or by the way, Eliab had a chance to fight Goliath. He didn't want to take it. And when they all came out, he criticized his brother. So it came out, the wash, but in a general sense, he couldn't see it. So they say, see, it doesn't matter what you're like on the outside as long as your heart's right. That's garbage. Because if your heart is right, you'll be right on the outside. Now, you can fool it for a while, but the fruit will eventually show. But if you're right on the inside, you will be right on the outside. And when those times come to test who you are on the inside, outwardly, you will pass those tests. That's the point. The Bible is very clear that who we are internally will be abundantly evident externally. We have to understand that. The point I want us to see tonight as we look at Psalm is this. The outward life that we live will be determined by our inward resolve. You could call it commitment. Everything we do outwardly is a result of what we have going on inwardly. And if we have the right kind of commitments inwardly, we will be the right kind of person outwardly. This psalm was written by David. So I've looked at it. Most of them believe that was written by David right before he would become king, or right when he had become king. And you think about David. David inherited a divided kingdom. They had just been defeated by the Philistines because of their disobedience to God. And now, I think it was Ishbosheth, one of Saul's sons, he's going to take part of the kingdom. And there's just a lot of a division, a lot of drama going on when David takes over. So he had a lot of work to do. He had some mistakes to overcome. And so as David is doing this, this psalm would fit that. David is having some dedication here. He's showing his resolve that he needs in his life and that he will need as a leader in the kingdom. That's why the word will is mentioned 9 times, I will. And the word shall is mentioned 6 times. Now, we read some of the Psalms, and they're Psalms of praise. God is good and all this, and we learn a lot from that. This is not necessarily a Psalm of praise. It's a Psalm of practice, what David is going to do. You have to understand how important that was, because the king was more than just a ruler. He was, in essence, to be honest, the spiritual guidepost of the nation. I know they had the high priest in that, but that's why if the king did well, the nation did well. If the king struggled spiritually, the nation struggled spiritually. And so David understood that, and David knew he had to make the right decisions. He wanted to be a godly person so that he could guide the country in a godly direction, but he knew it all started with him. And where did it start with David? He had to have the right resolve. He had to have the right commitments if he was going to be the right person. Understand that that is true of us today also. Our actions must be subject to our will, which is nothing more than our resolve. We make commitments on the inside so that when we have to decide what we're going to do on the outside, it's a very easy decision, like Daniel. Daniel determined in his heart that he would not defile himself. Not by our emotions, as we mentioned this morning, how emotions screw us up. Not by influences. And our will must be submissive to the Lord. It's not just enough to be a committed. By the way, I know some people that are very committed. I mean, they'll get up at 4 a.m, they'll do this, they'll do all these things, but their commitment level is not attached to anything except what they want. Our commitment must be attached to the will of the Lord, and we must be submissive to him and to his truth. Understand that anything we determine to do is a decision. And so if we're going to be determined, we must make a decision that we will do everything that God commands. And if we can do that, then we can follow it up with this action. This is what David's talking about. Now, I want us to look at the psalm, because in this psalm, I see six of David's determinations or commitments. And he didn't just make those commitments. He's going to show how those commitments will be demonstrated outwardly. He made a determination. I'm going to do this. And then it was demonstrated outwardly by this. So let's look at them tonight briefly. Number one, the first determination, he says, he goes, I will sing. Now, don't take that out of control. I'm not singing tonight. Okay, that could be very, very, very painful. Verse one, you want to hear me sing? I'm dropping a new CD on Tuesday, so you can download it on Apple. It's going to drop all right. It's going to keep dropping right straight down. Verse 1, I will sing of mercy and judgment. Unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. It's funny. The first thing he talks about is singing. Singing. By the way, because music's important. What we listen to and what we sing about is important, because that demonstrates your values. I can tell what's important to you, what you value in life, what you're committed to, by your music. David determines that what he sings will promote the values he believes. He says, I will sing. It's like, oh, I'm going to sing to the Lord too. Keep reading. I will sing of mercy and judgment unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. I've said it over and over. You say, why do you say it over and over? Because I don't think a lot of you hear it. Show me what you listen to, and I'll show you what kind of Christian you are. I don't care what you look like when you come into church. Well, I do care. I mean, come on. But some of you don't have a lot to work with. Amen? And you know, you get up and you, it's easy to sing the Christmas songs. Even the unsaved sing the Christmas songs. And I hope you sing during church. And by the way, you should. But my question is, when you slip out and you get in your car and no one's around, what do you listen to? Okay? When you are listening to something on your phone, you're plugging your little, I actually have the AirPod deals. They're really good. When I walk the dog, that way I don't have to pay attention to the dog, because I really don't like the dog. Or I'm walking with my wife. I don't wear them when I walk with my wife. I like to talk to her. Okay? The dog is, I tolerate the dog. And I take him out because, you know, it's like, whatever. But I listen to things. What are you listening to? What? I hope not. What are your values? Because that shows what your values are. You will never, ever, 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 ever rise above the level of the music you listen to. Spiritual Christians don't listen to godless music. Just be honest. That didn't go over very well. Let's say it one more time. Just pretend, okay? Spiritual Christians don't listen to garbage music. You can't. If you're a new Christian, if you're a newer Christian here, let me help you. One of the best things you can do other than walking with God is change the music you listen to. Now, back in the day, the Baptists, used to have the record burning. Anybody remember though? Bring your rock music, we'll burn it. No one listens to records anymore. Then pastor would have a CD scratching service. Listen, I don't want to make you throw your phones away. We're not going to have an iPhone destroying service. But you know what you need to do? Some of you need to wipe your music off of your phone, your iPad, your computer, wherever it is. Can I get a witness? You say, am I trying to be mean? Nope, I just know you're going to struggle in your life as a Christian. You're not. Whenever someone's struggling, check their music. You know, it's kind of hard to fall into sin when you're constantly listening to Amazing Grace. You know, are you washed in the blood? Listen, I'm not going to listen to that and then go have a beer. Okay? I have the beer before I listen to it, all right? So that just, it works out a lot better that way. But what, your values. David mentions here the two values. Now look at these values that David's singing about. Are you with me? God's love. I will sing of mercy. By the way, we all love God's love, do we not? Our contemporary Christian brethren, they all love the songs of God's love. God's love is like a tornado. You know, it's like a gentle, it's like rain in the summer. Okay, I don't want to hear all that stuff. God's love is a lot more powerful. But boy, now let's see the other one. And judgment. Now we don't, you know, I will sing of your judgment forever. We'll sing of God's love, but David's like, these are the things that are important. These are, you know, God's holiness. God is righteous. Holy, 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 Lord God Almighty. Okay, by the way, that's in the Bible. See, what we do is we pick and choose the things we like. Look at, and I'll just say this, you can take these contemporary Christian songs about love and you can just plug them into your girlfriend or your wife or your boyfriend or whatever you got. Your dog, your cat. It's just, you know, I just love you because you make me feel good. Well, who are you talking to? It's kind of hard to do that with God, with holiness. But see, he sang of these things because those were things he valued. His music lined up with his life. As a new Christian, I've mentioned many times, I was a rock and roller. Well, if I backslid, that's what I'd listen to. Okay, that's the flesh. And I just, like, goodbye. I can't listen to that because as I read my Bible, no one got up and told me, hey, get rid of that stuff. I didn't have someone discipling me. I just read my Bible and went to church. And I'm for discipling, by the way. But as I listened in church and I read my Bible and I listened to my music, I'm like, there's a disconnect here. So I got rid of the music. But you know, I didn't like the church music. I'm like, that's just ridiculous. Okay? It's kind of hard to go from, like, you know, Led Zeppelin to the Lewis sisters. It's just kind of different. So I just said, I don't need music. But you know what happened? As I sat there and I grew my relationship, I liked the Christian music. You know why? Listen, because it matched my values. God changed my values. And so that music was important to me. It's a little quiet, but we got to be careful about our music. Who do we sing to? Well, unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. I enjoy music. You enjoy music. You know, music, in a sense, is primarily for God. It's for his honor and glory. Now, we get in on that. So David said, I will sing. David's life, what are you saying about, was the Lord. That's probably why he wrote most of the book of Psalms. Number two, he said, I will behave. Look at verse 2. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. Oh, when will thou come unto me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. So David talks about, I'm going to live right. I'm going to do right. That demonstrates his integrity. David didn't want anything in his personal behavior to cause him to lose fellowship with God and, in an essence, hurt the kingdom. Now I know you know the story, and I know the story. David kind of messed up on that towards the end, didn't he? And exactly what he didn't want to happen happened. Okay? Because he wasn't careful. But his commitment was, that's what I wanted. That should be what we want. We want to have integrity. We must behave ourselves wisely. See, David knew that he was stepping into the kingdom. And so, although there was a lot of responsibilities, eventually there was going to be a lot of perks that come with that. See, do you know in most of the kingdoms, the king could be immoral and do whatever he wanted, right? And so David knew that this was going to come, and he wanted to be careful. Someone said this: the perils of advancement are often more seductive than the perils of adversity. And he's having adversity right now. Poor guy. He's mad I was getting on his music. Okay. So often that we when things are going well for us, that's when the struggle to let our life and our guard down happens. David said, I don't want to do that. I want to have integrity. I want to walk within my house with a perfect heart. David wanted his life right for the two key areas that he would live. He said, I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. Wisely, I think that has to do a lot with how he was going to rule the kingdom. He had to live in such a way that he had the kind of integrity so that what he did as a king and as a ruler would match up with what he believed. It's funny how the majority of Christians, we could care less about how we act at work. See, we're more concerned with how we are around Christians than we are around those who are not saved. If I was going to judge, and I'm not judging, Brother Charlie, you would. If I'm judging someone's Christianity, your level of Christianity is somewhere about where it is when you're at work. And at the other place he mentions, within my house, how he lives at home. So what do you do when no one's around? We have to determine that we are going not just to believe the right things, we're going to be committed to living those things which we say we believe. Very important. Christianity must be shown in our life, around others, and in our home where we live. The reason most children raised in Christian homes walk away from the faith is because their Christian home was a Christian home in name only. The short time I was in church before I went to Bible college, I was a couple guys, I went to church members' homes with maybe someone I met at the church, and I'd walked in, and some of the things I saw, I'm like, I was confused. And I'm like, I thought this was a Christian home. It's kind of confused me. I will behave myself. How does your life match up with what you say that you believe? David said he wanted his life to match up. Number three, he says, I will not set. Verse 3, he goes, I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. David was careful about what he allowed to be set or placed near him. That demonstrates his convictions. Convictions is what you believe, which really will cause you to reject some things. David said, as a king, everybody's going to try to get a piece of him. Everybody's going to try to get on the inside, right? Get close to him. He goes, I'm not going to set any wicked thing before my eyes, and also the work of those, I'm not going to have that. And he'll talk a little bit more about that later. But he's saying, I have some convictions. David stated that no pure thing would be allowed into his vision. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. Wicked thing is really where we get the word Belial, wicked, worthless, destructive. Because I'm not going to put that before my eyes. Let me ask you, what do you allow your eyes to see? You'd be very careful. What do you watch on television when no one's around? What do you allow yourself to see? Do you have like one rating here and one for when you can get away with it? What are you looking at on your iPad or on your iPhone? You say, you know, Pastor, that's a struggle for me. Well, if you can't get under control, get a flip phone. Kind of hard to watch bad things on a flip phone. Kind of, hey, baby, it's cool. You can't even text on a flip phone, right? Okay, here we go. Dut, dut, next letter. Dut, 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 next letter. Dut, next letter. Space. I mean, how many remember those days of texting? It's like, just call them. It's faster. Be very careful. You know, there's ways around everything. By the way, parents, don't let your kids have these things. You know, I haven't said it in a while. Should I say it again? I don't think teenagers should have cell phones. Yeah. By the way, just so you know, I haven't changed my thought on that. I know you don't want to hear it. But I haven't said it in 2 months, so hear it again. Put the brethren in remembrance of these things, okay? Every time, Brother Chim, you'd shake your head. Most every time we have a big problem with some kid in the school, phone's involved, iPad's involved, computer's involved. Oh, but I trust my little Yahoo. I don't trust my Yahoos either. They're not Yahoos, you know what I'm saying. By the way, I don't trust you adults either. Trust myself. Let's be careful. No. Okay, here's a bad sign. Can I just throw this out since the Spirit's giving me utterance tonight? You know, if you're married and your spouse wants to look on your phone like, hey, I'm not a child, don't look at that. Something's wrong. I don't know who said that on the patio, but thank you. Thank you. Hey, guys, quit being a knucklehead. What are you hiding on your phone? My wife knows my code. She was on my phone the other day. And by the way, I don't delete my text. And maybe I should. It's taking up a lot of memory. I was just scrolling one time. It all goes all the way back to like 14. Okay, my wife can look, and she'll look, and there are not going to be any blank spots of anybody I text. It's all right there. Okay, I got nothing to hide. That's why when you ladies, if I get a text from a lady, it's like a two-word answer, fine. Or it's something that's very benign. I'm not going to, by the way, if you text me and I give you, okay, thanks, the staff knows, it's because I look on my watch and it gives me an answer right away. Like, hey, I can just click that. Okay, sure. Get lost. Drop dead, you know, boom. 2-3 words, all right? It's easy for me. I'm not going to, and I may say something, but I'm going to be very careful about that. But anyhow, back to reality. What are you allowing yourself to see? Remember, the lust of the eyes. That's one of the world, that's worldliness. Here's the key. I want us to get this and we'll move on. What we look at determines what we think. Here's a verse you all ought to memorize. And that, as I read it to you. Okay. Catch. Thank you, Ryan. I've made a covenant with mine eyes. I made an agreement with my eyes. Signed document. You know, here we go. Why then should I think upon a maid? Now, wait a minute. What would be the covenant with my eyes? I'm not going to look at that girl. By the way, they're everywhere. They dress like, I don't understand how a guy can let their wife or their girl or their daughters go out dressed like that. Who are they trying to attract? Who are you trying to impress? Okay? I don't think Trump's looking. but he doesn't say, I made a covenant in my eyes, wherefore should I look at a maid? Why? If a girl's walking down the road and she's dressed, I don't know, what is it, still a hoochie? I don't know if that's even a word. Inappropriately. Okay, I was just trying to get down to your level. Woo! If a guy's staring at her, he's thinking about something. So be very careful. That's life. What we look at is what we think about. Why is that a big deal? Because what we think about determines how we act. Romans 12:2, be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed. God says, I want you to be transformed. How? By the renewing of your mind. In other words, the way you change in your actions is you change your mind, because if it's in your mind, it comes out in your actions. So if it's coming in your eye and it's lodging in your mind, it's coming out in your actions. Progression. So let's be very careful. Make a determination. I have some convictions about some things. I'm not going to let this stuff, I'm not going to be involved with evil. I'm not going to let this go. Our depraved behavior, depraved behavior is everywhere in our society to see. The things that God tells us to stay away with, stay away from, our society now promotes times 10 in deviant ways. We got to be very careful. Number four, he says, I will know. I will not know. Verse 4, 5, and 7, a froward heart shall depart from me. I will not know a wicked person. Whoso privately slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. Him that hath a high look and a proud heart will I not suffer. He, verse 7, he that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. He goes, I will not know. That determines his separation. He now moves from personal commitments to people commitments. I'm going to be careful about people. I've got my personal commitments about how I'm going to live my life, the things I'm going to do. Now I've got to have some people commitments about who, as we get to the next point, who am I going to let in and who am I going to keep out? We have to be careful about our friends. He mentions a froward heart. By the way, very important. The king had to have the right people around him. He had to. Look, Ahab, and maybe I'm wrong here. If I am, it's not the first time. Ahab was one of the more wicked kings, but I don't think all of his wickedness was him. I think a lot of it was Jezebel. Do you see that? Do you remember one time God was going to judge him? And he went and was remorseful, and God said, look at him. He's remorseful. I'm not going to do that in his time frame. But you know why he could never turn the corner? Because he had that Jezebel living there. She was just pure evil. He was bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not letting him off the hook. She was evil in nylons, okay? She was bad. And she just stirred him up. Bible says that. Jezebel stirred him up. By the way, and when it talks about false doctrine and some things as we went through the seven churches in Revelation, didn't mention Ahab. It mentioned Jezebel. That's kind of hard. He shouldn't have never married her in the first place. Feel bad for him. But wrong crowd. Think of Psalm 1. What's Psalm 1? It's a song of blessing. It's a psalm of having success in your life. What does it start off with? Stay away from this, this, and this. Counsel of the ungodly, the way of the sinners, and the seed of the scornful. He says, I will not know a wicked person. Separation from sin is basic to spiritual health and growth. And more often than not, the road to sin is paved by the people we run with. There's good people sometimes, and they get messed up because they just cannot give up that one friend who's tearing them down. But I love my friend. I love them too, but they're yahoos. And by the way, if you love them and you want to help them, you're not helping them by demonstrating a very watered-down type of Christianity. And I'm not saying be mean to people. But I love my friends. But when I got right with God, I did not hang around with them anymore. When they wanted to hang around, I brought them to church. I brought them to my house, and we take them to church. I'd try to do spiritual things to help them. Okay? But I wasn't going to just go hang out with them because I knew what that meant. Oh, but those are my homies. Uh-huh. Okay, what about Jesus? I kind of think Jesus is kind of a better friend than that. And by the way, I wanted them to know that, you know what, if there's a problem in their life, maybe they'll come talk to me. I don't want them to say, that guy says he's a Christian, but he hangs with us and we do all kinds of nonsense. That Christianity must be a fake. Now, beyond that, we just need to be careful. Remember Larry Brown, he preached it here years ago. Most of you probably weren't here. He has a famous sermon called Amnon Had a Friend. He says it with a twang. Amnon had a friend. Kind of sounds like the Snyders. He said this. He goes, you are now. I'm not going to say it. Every time I hear it, I want to say it with that. It's in my mind, his accent. You know what I'm saying? But he says, you are now or soon will be what your friends are. Maybe you struggle because you want to be something, but the friends you are making you something else. If I was interested in a girl, I was going to say guy or girl, I would never be interested in a guy. But I'm talking third person about all y'all. If I was whatever you are and you're interested in a guy or a girl, if I'm not a better Christian when I'm around them, Lehigh. I'm out. Okay? You know, beat me up, Scotty. I'm done. Be careful. You know, I just grew up in school with this person. And they took a toll. Pray for them, love them, be kind to them, don't spend time with them. Okay? And then even some of the people we hang around that are kind of maybe not the wrong people, listen to some of the things, slander, verse 5. I mean, they're just critical. The Christian sin, right? There are people that love church, and they'll come to church, and they'll love church, and then they get around someone, they're like, man, isn't the church great? Well, you know. And it's like, oh, gee. It's like, you know, when you're in school and you like that girl, and, oh, man, you thought she was cute, and she was sweet, and your friend goes, oh, her? She's a, oh, okay. Hey, your friend's an idiot. Or maybe he's right. I don't know. But they start to slander or say little things, or they're proud about things, and you start catching that spirit like, huh, and you look at things differently. Be very careful about that. Number 5, David says, I will see. Verse 6, remember, we're in the people phase here, right? Mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. David said, my servants are going to be right on. They're going to be spot on. They're going to be the right kind of guys. They're going to be the faithful of the land. Those are the guys I'm going to surround myself with. So God's not telling you not to have friends. God's telling you be very wise in your commitments and the friends that you do have. I will see. That demonstrates my influences. Who do you allow to influence you? You should hang around people that are going the same direction that you're going or are farther down the road that you are so they can help you to get there. Who do you hang around with? See, God doesn't say just stay away from the wrong influences. He says pick up the right influences. That's just like I would say, I'm telling you, get rid of your old music and pick up some good music. Okay? And so I'm just not into that stuff. You'll get into it. If you're spiritual, you'll like spiritual things eventually. It'll become the norm to you. It's like, what are you eating? You grow up, and you know, by the way, you don't make your kids eat vegetables or anything, so they hate vegetables. They think it's a sin. It's a cuss word. I hated vegetables growing up. And I started eating them because I just thought, you know, I'm at college, and I'm in a hurry, and that's what's on the plate, and I'll eat it. Okay? And I was tolerating it, but, you know, now I like it. Most of them. There are some that we just don't get along. Beets. I don't like beets. Not the ones you put on your ears. The ones you eat, eggplants, whatever. But you have to cultivate that. As you're eating, it's like, this is really good. Now I like it. Now I want it. If you're going the right direction, you have the right kind of desire and mindset, you'll cultivate the right things. You'll want to be around the right people. I wanted to hang around Christians who were ahead of me, Christians that would promote me. Hey, let's go soul winning. Hey, did you read your Bible? You come into faithfulness route. You're going soul winning. If you miss church, hey, how you doing? You missed. Are you okay? Were you sick today? Praying for you. Not checking up on you because they care. Trying to help you. By the way, we ought to be okay with that. When it comes to spiritual integrity, it's not just who you don't hang around with. It's who you want to hang around with. Proverbs 13:20 is still there. He that walketh with wise men shall be wise. Now, we always forget the back part of the verse. But a companion of fools shall be destroyed. Who are you going to be? Hang around. Psalm 119:63. I am a companion of all them that fear thee and of them that keep thy precepts. You know what I'm looking for? I want that person that loves God. I want that person that, they're not perfect. They're serious about God. David said, I will see. By the way, you know where a good place to find good friends is? Church. Hebrews 10:24. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and good works. Then lastly, he says, I will destroy. Verse 8. I will early destroy all of the wicked of the land that I may cut off all wicked doers from the city of the Lord. David knew the importance of righteousness in a kingdom. He knew that ultimately his success or failure as a king and in the kingdom is related to his relationship with God and righteousness. When it talks about the kings in the 1st and 2nd Kings, and then 1st and 2nd Chronicle, and so-and-so, and you know, in the 17th year of the reign of so-and-so, so-and-so was made king of Judah. And he did that which was right in the sight of the Lord, or he did not that which was right in the sight of the Lord. That's how God determined the kings. Did he do what God said, or did he not do what God said? Did he live in righteousness, or did he not live in righteousness? And that's how God sees us. What do we want? And so David said, I will destroy. Demonstrated his righteousness. Destroy means to put to an end, to exterminate. You know, we have some guys that do it. I don't like the term pest control. I don't want to control the pest. You know what I want? A pest assassin. Right? What did we used to call them? Exterminators. And I'm like, now, I know you can get rid of cockroaches, bugs, and all that. How are you guys with people? Okay. You know, I don't want to control the pest. One time, when we lived over on El Cedro, we lived over there for like 18 years. One time, we really had a problem with cockroaches. One time. And I remember it was like 2 in the morning. I went to get water. I opened up the thing, and I killed one. And I saw another one. By the time I went to, I killed 7 of them. And I'm like, problem. We didn't call the control guy and say, now, what I want you to do is we had 7 last night. Can you get it down to 3? I'm like, kill those things. I don't want them here. I want them eradicated. And I'll leave the dog there too, so you can take care of all of it at once. Okay? David said, you know what he said? I'm not going to tolerate wicked. I'm going to exterminate it. I'm going to get rid of it. People that don't understand the Bible don't understand, like the story of Elijah. He got rid of, he didn't just say, aha, you prophets of Baal, you lost. He had them all exterminated, not controlled. Because they were the problem in the land. They got rid of all the things that are sin and tore down the groves and all of that stuff. David said, I don't want it around me. I don't want to have a toleration for wickedness. By the way, I hate to say this, Christians do have a toleration for wickedness. We do. Now, I understand we love the sinner and hate the sin. But sometimes we love the sinner so much we tolerate the sin. Are they really that bad? Is it really that bad a thing? Here's how I judge that. You ready? What does God say? Done. If God says it's bad, I just want his mind on the thing. And so if we're not exterminating the evil or the sinfulness around us, it's going to permeate and become a part of our lives. And David said, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. What's the point tonight? I have no idea. The point is this. I can tell what you're committed to because it's going to be demonstrated in your life over a period of time. You can fake it for a while. It'll come out. You follow Christianity, you know things, stories and stuff. It comes out. But you know what? If you're the right kind of person, that'll always come out. How's your fruit in your life? By your fruits, you shall know them. What are you doing in your life that demonstrates what your real values are? Can you openly and outwardly demonstrate your values, your integrity, your convictions, a life of separation from those that would turn you from God? Because that's what David did. And maybe because we sit on the fence and we're not willing to make a decision is why we struggle. See, and I'm done. When I say that, I follow through. You see, Christians don't like to be demonstrative anymore and make decisions and just be like, I'm just going to try to do the right thing. That doesn't work. You have to make a decision. God pushed for decisions. And you have to make, am I going to be committed to this thing or not? And if you're not committed, your life will show. Well, I'm just going to try. You ever ask someone, are you coming to church? I'm going to try to be there tomorrow. It's like, okay, I'll visit you next week and see if you'll come then. They're not coming. Don't try. Let's be committed to these things. And it'll be demonstrated outwardly. Let's stand tonight. Every head bowed, every eye closed, just for a minute.